I'll be presenting next. I feel a little bit queasy about introducing myself. One thing maybe I should say is that I'm fairly new to the Healthy People family. I joined the National Center for Health Statistics just under 2 years ago, and I was in academia at City University of New York. So I would definitely encourage you to give us feedback at the end to make sure that the methods that we are using here don't remain in the ivory tower and actually could be useful in the public health realm. So what I'll be talking about today is looking at, there's not much room to put anything here. I'll be talking about measures of health disparities, and we're looking at possibly supplementing some of the ones that we've been using in the past. And as I said, this is work in progress, so my email is right there. Please let me know your thoughts, positive or negative. I have no relationships to disclose, and I'd like to acknowledge our branch, our diligent, hardworking research team at NCHS, including Kimberly and David, who are here today, Liz Jackson, Jeff Piercy, Bruce Jonas, who's who was instrumental in getting me the data on the major depressive episode, the example that I'm going to talk to you about a little bit later, and also Rebecca Hines, who's our branch chief. So I'm just going to talk to you a little bit about the current practice for calculating disparities and looking at candidate supplemental measures. And essentially, the approach I'm going to take is maybe your least favorite, I'm not sure, but basically going from risks to odds and mimicking the ideas of logistic regression and the odds ratio. But I'll do that in a way that might help alleviate some of the issues with interpreting disparities when some objectives are expressed in the adverse event and some are expressed in the favorable event. And I'll illustrate using an example from NISDA on major depressive episodes. So currently what we do, at least as of the final review, the Healthy People 2010 final review, is that within a given domain, like sex, race, ethnicity, or education, what we do is we look at percent relative differences relative to the best group rate. And I'll tell you in a minute how we define what the best group rate is. But basically, that's what it is. We take the simple difference in the numerator, we divide it by the rate for the best group, the reference group, and we multiply by 100 to get a percent. The way we get a best group rate in Healthy People 2010 and after a lot of consideration is that we decided to use the group with the least adverse health outcome, and so we, in order to determine what group has the least adverse health outcome, if we do have measures of variability, we also impose a reliability condition. So when we look at disparities, they're relative to a fairly stable point and not too variable. For the purpose of calculating disparities, what we do is restate objectives that are stated in terms of the favorable outcome as in the adverse. So, for instance, health insurance or immunization objectives, which we tend to want to increase, and they're expressed in the favorable event, we re-express them for the purpose of computing disparities. And that has caused some controversy in the literature. Okay, so at any rate, here's one objective, 1.1 in 2010, which aims to increase the proportion of persons aged under 65 with health insurance. And the highest rate here for health insurance was the non-Hispanic white rate with 88% in 2008. And let's just say, for the sake of example, we want to compare that rate to the rate for the American Indian or Alaska Native population, which was 72%. So what we would do for the purpose of computing the disparities is we re-express those rates as rates of non-insurance. And so In the reference population, which is the non-Hispanic white, we have 12% of non-insured, compared to 28% of non-insured in the American Indian and Alaska Native population. And you see, of course, that when you look at it this way, the rate for the American Indian and Alaska Native population is over two times as high as the rate for the non-Hispanic whites. So this is just a little snapshot from what our infamous red table, the health disparity table, looks like in the final review. So this is from the cancer focus area. And one of the things that you can do here is it's first of all sort of indicate the best route by capital letter B, and then depending on how large or small the disparity is relative to that group, you indicate it by color gradient. And so that gives you a visual to simultaneously look at a whole topic area across different domains. So it's kind of a useful thing to have, and people have had some successes with it, although it takes a little bit of getting. It takes a bit of. It has a little bit of learning curve in the beginning to be comfortable with it. So the main limitation, of course, as I hinted to earlier, is that, well, one is first of all just the use of the word best. Best here is refers to highest rate of health insurance, and so best is tends to be interpreted as a good thing. So we have to be careful, though, because if best refers to the highest rate from the get-go, and then we change its meaning mid-sentence and say, oh, and by the way, we're going to re-express rates in terms of the adverse event, and now best refers to the lowest rate, then it could be misleading to some people in terms of first read. So that's one thing. And the other thing, of course, is that if you do compute disparities relative to the highest rate of insurance, which was the 88% for non-Hispanic whites and the 72% insurance rates for American Indian Alaska Native, then of course the disparity is only 18%. It's not 133. So depending on how you look at this, you can get very different results. And that certainly, if you're defending a case, if you're a lawyer and you're defending a case and you're trying to argue that in court, then it could be a little bit confusing, to say the least. And one other limitation that we have in healthy people is that we only have the rates that are given to us that are directly linked to the direction inherent in the objective. So if the work group, if the federal interagency work group decides we want to look at the rates of insurance in that population, then that's what we want to look at. We can't look at the rates of non-insurance, so we can't publish them, in other words. So it makes for a very long footnote and a fairly complicated technical appendix in the final review to explain this, and we'd like to perhaps make this a little bit simpler. Okay, so one alternative or one possible way of dealing with this is to look at the odds of an event. So I'm just going to use P to denote the probability of the adverse event and Q to denote the probability of the favorable event, which will be the complement of that event. And I'm going to use that terminology, which you may be uncomfortable with because it has to do with betting, but or originally came from the from betting, but it's actually quite insightful. And we're going to say that the odds against the favorable health outcome is defined as the ratio between P and Q. Okay? So, for instance, in 2008, the odds against an American Indian or Alaska Native person aged under 65 having health insurance are 28 to 72. And you can also say it the other way. You can say that the odds in favor are 72 to 28. So as long as you keep track of the numerator and the denominator, you're okay. So just for those of you who are not familiar with odds or are less comfortable with them, there is a one-to-one correspondence, obviously, between odds and probabilities. The reason I'm showing you this picture is that, the probabilities and the odds don't match up quite nicely in terms of decimals. So, for instance, an odds of 10 to 1 is a probability of 0.91. It's not 90%, it's 91%. An odds of 2 to 1 is 2/3, so it's 0.667. Okay, so the correspondence is not as neat as you'd like it to be, but still, you know, so you have to shift gears, in other words, to interpret the two. And those slides will be, if you can't read from back there, those slides will be available online. And of course, if the probability of the event is 0.5, which is the midpoint, then we say that the odds are evens. And that's actually, the 0.5 is actually something we'll come back to, because it's slightly problematic in how we deal with things for disparities purposes. So just mimicking what we did for the relative percent change, what we're going to do is define the group with the best odds as the one that has the smallest odds against the favorable. And you can define it in equivalent ways, you know, whether it's the group that has the best odds in favor of the adverse, you just want them to be smaller, or in favor of the favorable to want them to be larger, and so on and so forth. So the example we had before with the odds in favor of a non-Hispanic white person under age 65 having health insurance were approximately 7 to 1, 88 to 12. Okay. So for every 7 people who have health insurance in that population, 1 will not. So now that we have this terminology and this framework, can we use it to look at what it would mean to achieve parity? And so we're gonna look at it basically as very much like an odds ratio, but this is a ratio of log odds. I mean, other than it's interesting to look at mathematically, I think it might be useful. What it ends up being is an exponent. So it's like taking the odds for the group that you're interested in, let's say American Indian, Alaskan Native, and you want to try to determine the exponent that you would need to raise those odds by in order to obtain the odds for the reference group. In other words, it's just like the odds ratio, but this is multiplicative on the log scale. Parity would be achieved if the PAE, or when the PAE is equal to 1, the parity achievement exponent. I'm calling the PAE. This is the case that's most common in healthy people, is that we typically have we're typically on one side. We have let's say adverse events, and so the odds typically are smaller than 1. And by definition, the odds for the reference group will be less than or equal to the odds for the group of interest. And so for the example of American Indian Alaska Natives compared to non-Hispanic whites, you would need to almost square the odds to go from the odds for the Hispanic, the American Indian Alaska Native to the reference odds. So this is basically multiplying by 2 on the log scale. This may be visual. I think the main thing with looking at odds is that you're working on both the people with health insurance and people without health insurance at the same time. It's not just comparing the risk. So, for instance, on the left, this is just a visual where out of 100 people, 72 have health insurance. That's green, and then orange. The orange boxes are representing 28 people without health insurance. And when you raise that to the power 2.11 or square it, the numerator is squared and the denominator is squared. And then you can find sort of a simpler fraction to write it as. And if the simplest fraction that you can write it at, that's pretty close to the what you want, is the 440 divided by 60. So obviously 440 is not the square of 72. I simplified it here a little bit, but that's how I got there. And so what you see is that you're changing the relative sizes, or the relative numbers of people with health insurance relative to people without health insurance. So you're changing that ratio. You're not just changing the a risk, a percent. So that's the main difference, I guess, in terms of the interpretation of this achievement exponent. So the main advantage of it is that it's invariant to whether your outcome is expressed in the favorable or the adverse event. And here's an example. The reason is that when you rate, you know, the square and is the same whether you apply it to, 1 on 15 or 15 on 1, you get the same exponent. So here in this particular case, the odds against having health insurance in the American Indian Alaska Native population are 28 to 72. You raise that to the 2.11 power, and you get the same answer as you would get if you were to just take the reciprocal of the reference odds. So that's nice, okay. So we don't have to worry about people telling us, well, it's confusing. I don't know if disparities are decreasing or increasing if you keep changing the direction of the objective. So that's a good thing. And another good thing is that we can relate it to something very familiar, at least to us and maybe in this room, the odds ratio, which, again, people are not necessarily comfortable with because it has its own limitations, but it's useful in that you can use it to make multivariate adjustments, to do modeling, in other words, and go beyond sort of the descriptive statistics that we've been working with in the past. So in terms of the relationship between those two, there's a nice little mathematical relationship between the two. And what you see basically is that that exponent is kind of a standardized log odds ratio. So it takes into account the odds in the reference group. So depending on how large or small these are, you're going to get. So I'm not sure if you guys maybe try to imagine an output from logistic regression. The log odds ratio are basically your coefficients on that scale, and then the denominator here, the logs of the odds for the reference group, is actually the intercept. So that's kind of like a ratio between those coefficients and the intercept for a simple bivariate logistic regression. All right, so let me take you through an example and conclude, because I think we want to leave sometimes some questions. This is an example from NISDA from 2009. It looks at major depressive episodes in the past year among persons age 25 and over. And we want to look at it by age and education, but also by sex and race ethnicity. And for this particular example, my colleague Bruce Jonas was interested in the interaction between sex and race ethnicity, and not just independently, because he, for instance, non-Hispanic white men would have a very different rate of major depressive episodes than, say, non-Hispanic black women. So he wanted to make sure to capture that. So these are some results. Basic descriptive statistics. In the overall population, there's a 6.4% rate of major depressive episodes. And then that rate is higher among persons aged 25 to 44, almost 8%, and much lower in the older adult category, 65 and over. And there's a little bit of a gradient on education, but not markedly so. And then you have also differences in sex and race ethnicity. So, for instance, black males have the lowest rate, 3.3%, whereas white females have the highest rate of 8.4%. So here are some results from just looking at unadjusted logistic regression. And basically, when you do unadjusted weighted regression, what you do is you run a regression, one with one covariate at a time. So you just basically recover the same rates that you had in the descriptive table. So let's just Let's do let's look at the one where you actually do adjust. And here, I might have to go up to point to this. So,
for instance, here, when you do adjust for the other categories like education and sex and race ethnicity, one of the things you see is that the let's look at something familiar. The odds is now the adjusted odds ratio is 4.14 versus it was lower before, and you can look at that on the parity achievement exponent scale, and you have an increase of about 10 percentage points. And similarly for the high school education. And the main issue here was that there was a confounding between the smallest age category and the high school education, the high school grad or last. And by doing the adjustment, obviously, you can take care of that and have much cleaner results. And then you can express those in terms of the odds against the favorable outcome. And for example, when you see that the odds against the favorable outcome for the lowest age category, it used to be 86 to 1,000, and now it's 100 to 1,000. So so you have 14 more people. It increased by 14 to 1,000. And similarly, there was an increase here from 69 to 78 to 1,000. And then you can still look at the familiar disparities and just look at, well, here's the best group rate and what are the relative differences. And as you can see, so even on this familiar scale, you also have an effect that's very, so you almost have an increase from about 236 to almost 300. So it's still an increase of disparities of about 50 percentage points relative to the best group. Once you adjust for those other categories, so we know that, but we haven't been it hasn't been possible to do this sort of multivariate analysis across the board for 1,200 or so objectives in healthy people. But what we're thinking is that at least perhaps for the leading health indicators, which are a subset of the healthy people objectives, which have data sources that are easy to access and easy to program. We can attempt to do this and have something additional to offer to the public, at least to the scientific audience. It would still be. I know ARC publishes the disparities report, and there's been a push towards looking at odds ratios and adjusting for covariates. But at the end of the day, they'd still report. The relative disparities in the percent terms, because they don't feel like the general public is very comfortable, or the policy audiences are very comfortable with looking at odds and those multivariate adjustments. So the main challenge, as I'm alluding to, is just communication. We're shifting the paradigm from odds, from probabilities to odds, and we're also looking at multiplication on the log scale rather than the natural scale. And there's, so when the exponent is negative, also it's not so clear how to interpret it. So maybe this is limited to only cases where the exponent is positive. If you go on, once this is posted online, there are some additional technical slides that you can look at that would explain this a little bit more. And so we find a PAE that's significant. What does it mean from the public health perspective? And can we actually assess statistical significance? The answer for the second question, the statistical significance, yes. It's just a statistic, and you can work out an approximate standard error for it and a t-test and so on. But public health significance is a different matter. And then it would be interesting to have sort of a map. To go from relative disparities to PAE. So you hope that the larger the disparities, the larger the PAE. And that's generally the pattern, but there are some exceptions depending on which side of the evens you are. So the main issue, and maybe that could be something that would be take home, is that
So if you have a probability of an event that's less than 50% of occurring, that, and if you were to just take a 0-1 decision about whether or not to endorse that event, then if it's less than 50, you wouldn't endorse it. If it's bigger than 50, you would. So that's the main change. So with odds, it's similar. And if you're comparing a group that has an odds that's less than 50, that less than a half, versus an odds that's in the other direction, then you're not only you no longer comparing comparable groups, because in one you have no the odds in favor of the event are smaller than the odds against, and in the other group it's the other way around. So the PAE gets a little bit tricky to interpret. I'm not sure if that got through, but okay. So essentially, you know, odds are not as easy to work with as probabilities are, and especially because of that midpoint, the 0.5. So we would need to take that into account in communicating those findings. Nonetheless, because of the fact that it resolves this dependence on the favorable versus the adverse expression of the objective, it could still be something that would be desirable for some of the more visible healthy people objectives. So that's it. Thank you very much. If you have any questions again, my email, let me know. Thank you. Thank you.